a sign of things to come. Yeah, it almost seemed like that particular cart needed a little bit of help. Anyway, good evening, valued shortwave listeners. It's time for another broadcast from Radio Timtron Worldwide. For November the 15th, we are halfway through the month. The year of our Lord, 2014. Last weekend, I was all prepped to do a really hot radio show. And I had no internet connection. I had everything ready to go. And it died. I was, to put it in my own words, yellified. Yes, I wasn't very happy at all. Well, when I got the internet back, I decided to peruse my emails, something that I haven't done for a while. And there was one from my good friend, Paul Wolcott, W2JTD, that's jingling, tingling dingleberries. And the message was very brief. Our good friend and mentor, Bill Nagel, W3DUQ, had passed away Friday, just slightly over a week ago. Kind of hit me like a ton of brick. Yep. So, what can I say? Tonight's broadcast will be in remembrance of Uncle Willie, W3DUQ. I have a number of, I don't know if you could call them interviews, but just friends of mine that have been very much influenced by Uncle Willie way back when. So there will be a certain amount of music, because music is what a certain amount of it was all about. His influence on me as a young Johnny novice was rather profound, to say the least. So this evening I'm celebrating here as I raise a glass of red stuff to Uncle Willie. Well, the one thing about time is it marches on, and so does the weather. People come, people go. Music comes, music goes. But the weather is what keeps going on, and the beat does go on, for sure. Well, my various early remembrance of Bill was way back then on a hot August night in 1966. My new passion was amateur radio. Although I did not have a license back then, you had to take a Morse code examination along with a theory examination. And theory was no problem, because that's what my passion was about, but Morse code was another thing. I struggled hard. And like many people, I said, screw it. I'm going on the air without a license. I'm becoming a boot. So I became a boot. I flipped my call letters as a pirate station around. I had the call letters of WXNZ, and I was going to be W1XNZ. But there was no W1XNZ, because X denoted an experimental station. So I became W1NXZ. Bob from Beverly first transmitter, which I used for pirate work, I'd made into an amateur transmitter. It was known as the Crapbox 40, which survived the fire of 92. It's in rough shape, but it lives, and one of these days I'll resurrect it. But that was my means of reaching out and touching people out there in radio land. Well, it was late at night on that hot August night. On a Saturday night, I was tuning around. And I heard these two stations in Pennsylvania. Dave, K3ZRF, who is unfortunately not with us, one of the coolest guys on the planet. And Bill, W3DUQ. I mean, these guys breathe life and interest and excitement. And I tried valiantly to break in, but my piss-weak little, I don't know, 25 watts or so, and the rectangle loop antenna just didn't have much of a signal. I tried and tried and tried. Finally, when they signed at around 1:30 or 2 in the morning, I was able to snag Dave. And he heard me, but just barely. Well, in time, I got my general class amateur radio license and got on the air in September of 1967. Well, I have family scattered around here and there, and family in Pennsylvania in the area where nearby where Bill lived. Bill lived in Honeybrook, Pennsylvania, and he moved to a little tiny fly speck place known as Icedale, which was attached to Honeybrook. Yep, it's all built up now, but back then, you know, it was God's country. Yes, it was. And at that point in time, I really wanted to get to know him. And I remember when I was visiting my cousin, you see, anything out of town was a toll call. So I couldn't just call the guy. So I must have chewed his ear off, just like people chew my ear off about incidental bullshit. I chewed Uncle Willie's ear off, and he just stood there and took it. Well, back then I had my technician license in the summer of 67. I brought an amateur station along in a trunk for 6 meters, knocked down beam, and it was truly stuff that I put together for no money at all. And my cousin lived in Coatesville, Pennsylvania, in a very high spot. So I was on the air. And then towards the end of the trip, Now, if I can get this right, my cousin's father's sister had a son who's also a ham. Joe Fell, W3GMS. So there's a very, very distant connection there. So I was told, hey, you want to meet Joe? He's in the ham radio. So I went for a little ride with my cousin and his father in the Mustang convertible. Yes, the Rustang convertible. Man, it was fun cruising down the highways and byways of our land from 30th Street Station. I think that was it. Or was it Penn Station? Whatever. But anyway, it was in Philadelphia. It had quite the ride. Yes, quite the ride indeed. Well, what can I say? It was exhilarating. I went and met Joe later on. And he had this little ham shack that was picture perfect. And on the table, you know, I was saying to myself, some guy that's going to have a plug-in shoebox appliance transmitter. Back then, the Japanese manufacturers had not crashed in on our shores. Maybe it was a swine. Maybe it was a drake. Maybe it was a heap shit SB series. Nope. It was a little heap shit DX60 and an HR10 receiver and a crapstool for $38.68. That's where everybody hung out. And he turned it on. And there it was. I think he was just a novice then. Well, I was excited. It was great to meet Joe. Joe will be reminiscing here later on in this broadcast. So we go back to 1966 again. We go back a year as I'm going to be bumping around here as I'm making a ridiculously long-winded one-way old buzzer transmission through the auspices of WBCQ. This evening we are quadricasting on 5110, 7490, 9330, and 15.420, plus streaming out on the internet at WBCQ.com. Man, we are worldwide on the channel tonight. Let me tell you, Mr. Man, we are worldwide. Just thinking about it gives me goosebumps. But anyway, as a beginning radio amateur person, even though I didn't have a license, I did a fair amount of listening. And what was the big hush-hush talk was this pirate station that was showing up on 75 meters, which called itself WRFH, Radio Free Harlem. 3868 on your radio dial, here and there. It was hosted by a man named Rex, who had a very unusual voice. This guy didn't have three balls, he had four. Yes, he had four BAs. And I remember one night hearing the station come on the air. Through all the noise and the garbage, it was there. I was like, wow, I'm hearing my first pirate station on shortwave. I was so excited. It was actually medium wave by true definition. But then another phenomena started. What was known as a music QSO. Now, the playing of music is strictly verboten in amateur radio. But people with the big heavy metal transmitters and the big signals would sometimes strut their stuff and whip out a tune or two. Well, I was in my middle teenage years in the summer. My mother let me stay up as late as I wanted to. And Saturday nights were a very special night. Yes, Bill had this creature that he talked to, known as Boris, in the basement, with reverb and echo and all that kind of thing, and he was really into the monster flicks and the sci-fi stuff, and in the Boston areas, there were in many parts of the country, various TV stations here and there had their own grade B movie sci-fi and horror shows on Saturday night. In the Boston area, it was Fantasmic Features, hosted by this guy named Feep, F-E-E-P, who had a beak that kind of, his mouthpiece looked like that of a candlestick telephonium. I remember that voice.
Hello there. This is Feep. And on tonight's show, we are going to be featuring Forbidden Planet.
So I had the old black and white Philco 21-inch TV set that was in a metal box. it was a set that was put out by the Curb for collection, and I took it home and I repaired it, and that was my bedroom TV set. And I sat there transfixed to the screen watching that show. And after Fantasmic Features, I forget what the title of what it was that followed thereafter, but it was another monster or sci-fi flick. You know, Mothra. You know, films that were made in Japan with the English dubbed in, you know, to where the movements of the mouths of the actresses and actors didn't necessarily follow what was being heard. But by my bedside sat a bedside radio. I decided to move everything that had to do with radio, be it pirate or radio or audio, tape machine, all that. Well, no, I kept the tape machine up there and a speaker system. But down below in the basement, I had all my radio equipment set up except for one receiver. I had this wooden cabinet Philco All-American 5 set with Loctel tubes that came from my grandmother's sister. And I modified it. I took the loop antenna, I just disconnected it. And I kind of wound up a coil and stuck it in there, and I pulled the oscillator coil out and just kind of guesstimated how many turns to throw on the thing and popped that back in, and voila! I had a radio that received 75 and 40 meters. I had that hooked up to a little piece of wire, an FPW, a friggin' piece of wire antenna. And I would listen into the goings-on. And at midnight, you know, things would settle down. And a carrier would come up, boom, silencing the frequency. And you'd hear the national anthem. The national anthem would play, and various old buzzards would get bent out of shape. There's music, we must jam it. But fortunately, their signals were weak compared. So what can I say? This tune blasted forth.
I'm
carrier would drop. There'd be little static crashes. And then another carrier comes on. And another soon song busts through the static. Fran Little is W3SCC broadcast engineer, and a longtime friend of Bill Nagel, W3DUQ. How long have you known Bill? When did you meet up with him?
I met Bill, I think, up at Harry Davis's place in the late 60s. W3FDY used to have a ham shack up on the top of the hill up at Gap, Pennsylvania, and everybody used to congregate up there. And I think Bill was one of the people that was originally up there with the crew, and I met him, and we had some fun, and that was the beginning of it all.
So I remember meeting you in 1967 in November, in a rather strange way.
Oh, yeah? I don't recall that particular meeting.
Well, Bill had a sign-off party when he lost his license for a year.
Uh-huh.
And then the power went out.
The power went out?
Yes, it did.
And then I have anything to do with me pulling the electric meter out?
Yeah, I think it was.
Okay.
There
makes
was
some sense now.
Lots of miscreancy that went on back then.
Oh, it was a party for sure.
Yep. Now, Bill will long be remembered. That's
absolutely.
For sure.
I still can't believe it happened.
I know.
Didn't realize his health was that bad.
Well, I didn't either. I had talked with him a number of times in the place where he was at, and it was looking like if he got better, he'd get out. But he never did.
Yeah, that's a shame. Well, we'll always remember the fun we had with him anyway.
Okay. What do you remember about his part? How many of his parties did you attend? A few?
Actually, I didn't really attend that many parties. I would come up there, the guys would be hanging out, and I was just traveling with my friends, you know. We'd come up in the car and crash the thing. But I really wasn't actually at the parties. I mean, I didn't get up that often. I mean, it was a couple-hour drive for me to get up there, and I really only went up three or four times, I guess.
Wow.
I mean, okay. To see Bill, and then, well, we were up to Harry's place a couple other times.
All right. Well, I appreciate you spending a little bit of time here with our microphoniums and telephoniums.
Oh, I'm glad we got to talk, yeah.
All right, Fran.
Okay, Tim, well, thanks for calling.
Oh, thank you for spending the time here.
All right.
And have a good evening.
Thank you. Talk to you later.
Talk to you later. Well, back then at that time frame when Bill's electric meter got yanked. Yeah, there was a lot of practical joking going on and whatnot. But with the music playing, which happened on a every weekend, and I would just stay up late listening to like up to 2, maybe 2:30, 3 o'clock in the morning when they finally hang it up. It was all kinds of good crank and greaser 50s oldies. Not the wimpy shit, but good tunage, upbeat, party, energy. And I really, it was the kind of oldies radio that just did not even exist. Well, all good things come to an end, you know. Basically, the FEC received a number of complaints about the music. And eventually, they staked out the situation. The two miscreants involved were Bill, W3DUQ, and Dave, K3ZRF. Well, the feces showed up and nailed Bill. They didn't get Dave, but they got Bill. His license got yanked for a year. They took it away. So we had a sign-off party. Yep. In November. Damn. That was this month. And I'm trying to think of... See, 1967 till now. Man. Mmm. In 3 years from now, that will have been 50 years. 50 years. 50 years. Man, the passing of time. Have some red stuff. Boy, that really does make you feel like an... buzzard, for sure. Well, a lot of people were invited, including little old me. I'd only had my ham license for a couple months. I was kind of a Johnny novice, you know. You know how it is. Yeah, I was growing hair on my face and hair on my nutsack. But very unaware of a lot of things. So, I saddled up the metal dinosaur. And got a ride to, believe it was Coatesville, Pennsylvania. And I was met by a guy whose name is Jesse. K3GKB. Who is a very bizarre and interesting character. He's still around. I've kind of had peripheral contact with him. But he was the one that was behind WRFH. You see, he worked as an intern at WBAI, the Pacifica station in New York. And there was a strike going on. And he had a number of tapes of the Reverend Adam Clay Powell. And I understand they kind of showed up on 75. But that was a genesis for this very interesting pirate. Just a postscript is, one time visiting Bill, found his reel-to-reel tapes, and in it was, maybe it was the master tape of one of the RFH broadcasts. And I made a dupe of it. Back in the days when I was involved with Radio Clandestine, I also aired WRFH on the 49-meter band. This is like back in the 80s. Way back. Unfortunately, that being, to my knowledge, the only surviving recording tape of WRFH has been destroyed by the fire of 92, only to be preserved in memory. Unless there is a copy of it floating around somewhere out there in the ether. Well, anyway, Jesse met me. I think there were a couple of others with me, or we all just kind of accrued at the same time from different directions at the Metal Dinosaur Station. And Jesse had this Oldsmobile. And the thing was piss beaten. Yes, it was piss beaten. And he had a, I remember he had a mobile rig. It was an SBE 34. Little tiny thing, you know, was ahead of its time. He'd be on there,
K3GKB, mobile.
And he was in touch with the mother ship. Meanwhile, the transmission clutch is slipping. And he'd really wail on it. And that engine would be winding up. And the transmission was burning. You could smell the hot transmission oil in the air. And he'd be hurtling in the downhill part. And then he'd come up, because Pennsylvania's got lots of rolling hills. And the thing would be struggling to make it up the next hill. And by the grace of God, We made it to Bill's. Man, I was awestruck. All these people there, people I'd talked to on 75 from Long Island and Jersey and Pennsylvania. Yep. And there was Bill's sound system, which he built the amplifier and the low end of it, the bass reflex cabs, pair of 12s, one in each cabinet, the AR2As that sat on top of it, the TV set in the middle, and the color organs. I think those were a later thing, but I'll be progressing onward with a story about Uncle Willie's color organs and remembrance of those color organs and the New Year's Eve party I went to. Yes, indeed. So I was up till all hours, as was everybody else. And everybody was having a good time. Blah. And there's a photo that was taken, the infamous Christmas card. And it was, it was fashionable to have organizations like, you had the NAACP, the National Association of Colored People. Well, we had the NAAM, the National Association for the Advancement of Amplitude Modulation, which at that particular point in time, in amateur radio, it's so inefficient. You should go sideband like everybody else. What's the matter with you? People, by and large, didn't care about audio quality. It's just whether or not they're being heard. But then again, if the signal is big and you can hear each other, why sound like crap? AM is so much more simpler to generate and make sound good than sideband. There's a lot less going on. It's a basic mode of communications. That's what it is. No, it doesn't have the efficiency of sideband, but who gives a shit? It's amateur radio, for Christ's sake, you know? So that was the mindset of all of us, and still is to this day. Now, Bill had a lot of interesting equipment. He had a heap shit Apache in which he had an external modulator with a pair of 4CX300s. And he put TV sweet tubes in the PA. And he had what was referred to as an upside-down tube. It was nothing more than a high-level balanced modulator making double sideband. If you exceeded 100% negative with a standard AM envelope, you start going into double sideband. And unlike a regular old AM signal where if you overmodulate, you clip and splatter and distort, with inserted carrier, double sideband shows, so to speak, you just got louder and louder and louder and more obnoxious and louder. No, it didn't necessarily sound good on an AM radio. You had to use a synchronous detector. And while I'm lingering on the synchronous detector, for those of you out there in radio land, this broadcast is quadricasted on 5110, 7490, 9330, and 15.420. All except for 7490, which is a true full carrier double sideband AM signal. The others are all upper sideband with carrier. So if you possess the ability to use synchronous detection on your modern shortwave radio, or if you have what is commonly referred to as a flex radio, they do a real good job with synchronous detection. I mean, that's what you do. You just go into the sync mode and go to upper sideband, and there you are. We'll sound bigger and better and fuller than ever, you know? But Uncle Willie was on the forefront. He built a sync detector using vacuum tubes. I remember it had the famous RCA 7360 beam deflection tube. And he did an article on in 73 Magazine, which will be announced a little later as far as how to access it. Yes, he was ahead of his time. And the output of that heap-shit Apache chassis was looking into a homemade amplifier that used a pair of tubes that were referred to as 4-1250s. Well, I never heard of such a thing. That's a European nomenclature. Well, back in the day, the Amprex company, maybe they were, they were quite the movers and shakers in their own right, you know. Here in the U.S., it was always iMac this and iMac that. They were the dominant force of hollow-state amplification of high power. You had RCA, they had their own philosophies, and then you had Amprex. Well, Amprex, being European, imbued some interesting technology. They basically took the 833, repackaged it, and put in a smaller glass envelope, which the pins lined up and were the same size, where you could drop it into a 4-1000 type socket. Medium U triode, very bulletproof, used in induction heating equipment. Uncle Willie was working for a company that built that equipment. So he got a pair of tubes and a big-ass UTC's commercial-grade series plate transformer. I mean, the thing was a monster. I think it was a CG310, you know, 4,000 volts is what it was capable of. And that sat in the trailer trash closet, you know, with the metal doors in his end ham shack at his trailer in Icedale, Pennsylvania. And below the amplifier, which was rack-mounted, about a half-size, you know, rack that would probably, like, 40 inches high or whatever, there was this big-ass variac and various tape marks on the panel as to where to set the thing. Another thing that Bill had was he was probably one of the few guys that had the earliest of audio processing gear. Back then, solid-state audio processing gear was starting to happen. I think CBS Laboratories had the Volumax and the Automax. I think they were solid-state by then. But by and large, most broadcast stations used vacuum tube processing gear. You know, there's the fabled Gates stay level. And they all used a particular type of tube. I believe it was called a 6336 or something like that. But what sets it apart is it was a variable mu triode, which means as the control feedback voltage is applied to it, the gain goes down more in a linear function, so it makes a good compressor. So that's what the Unilevel was, and Bill built one. The Unilevel, trademark of the Generous Electric Company. Yes, all these manufacturers had their own brands of processors with their own little cutesy names, just as today, you know, designer drugs that you see advertised on TV, you know, with cutesy names. Well, I'm not going to go there. You know, that'll be another show where we here at Radio Timtron Worldwide will pick on weird names for cars that have nothing to do with what they are, and bizarre names for designer drugs that may have some very nasty side effects. But anyway, I digress. Yes, Uncle Willie's sign-off party. You know, I still have that card, because after the party, everybody that went received a Christmas card, which was a photo of a group shot of everybody that was there. Yep, you see Uncle Willie in there near the center. I'm way off at one end in an army jacket. Yeah, that was a cool thing to wear back then, was an army jacket. I had semi-longish hair. I was wearing an army jacket. And some sideburned action. And that was it. No beard, no stash, you know. Yes, the mustache, also known as a womb broom. But anyway, as we're rolling along here, what can I say? I fired up the 811 ring. Yes, known smoking a marijuana cigarette. Yup. Yup. It was all new. It was all exciting. Yeah. Just thinking back to those days. Indeed. While you hear the rain, the tranquility of nature wending its way through this broadcast. Yep. And then the quantity of beer that was consumed. So I was just really wiped out. And you know something? That photo exists. And if I have it, I'm going to see if I can scan it. And then maybe, just maybe, put it on the BCQ website. You know, photographic moments are a very precious thing, at least to those that remember. But you know the sad thing about it? When we all pass, those people in the future will say, "Who gives a shit?" But at the time, it was very significant. And then again, there was the music. Ah, yeah. The music that just played from his stereo. Like this tune here from Donovan. Mellow Yellow.
Just mad about saffron. Oh, saffron's mad about me. I'm just mad about saffron. She's just mad about me. They call me Mellow Yellow, quite rightly. They call me Mellow Yellow, quite rightly. They call me Mellow Yellow. We'll be right back. They call me Mellow Yellow.
Right, right.
They call me Mellow Yellow.
Telephonium right now is Mr. Kevin Strom, WB4AIO. And Kevin, how was Bill influential in your beginning years in amateur radio or just life in general?
Well, I first heard Bill W3DUQ when I was 12 years old and first getting interested in shortwave radio. It was about 1968. And I listened to him from the age of 12 up until I got my own amateur radio license, my advanced license in 1973, and was able to actually talk to him. So from the age of 12 to 17, I was a regular SWL to Bill's fun activities on 75 meters and his more serious stuff like his FutureNet.
Yes, his FutureNet.
On 3870 and on Sunday afternoons.
How would you describe the FutureNet?
Well, the FutureNet was really an extension of Bill's interest in science and the paranormal, and he took on a lot of the more interesting and unusual ideas that you might call the alternative science community was interested in. What really impressed me about Bill, besides his technical expertise, he had a great signal. He had the kind of amateur radio station I dreamed about having. It sounded better than a broadcast station, but beyond just the technical expertise, Bill was a guy who thought for himself. He didn't think in the normal channels. He didn't just accept the commonly accepted view. I mean, when he found out about, for example, Wilhelm Reich and orgone accumulators, he wasn't like a typical, you know, scientific skeptic and said, oh, that's nonsense, and just dismissed it. But he also wasn't like a true believer who said, oh, it's just a bunch, you know, it's all true. I believe everything Reich says. No. Bill was a guy who built an orgone accumulator for himself to test it out. He did other experiments, too. And he was able to take really controversial ideas, ideas about UFOs, ideas about extrasensory perception, about paranormal activity, and he could make you think about those things in a new way. And he could present those ideas in a calm, reasoned, logical manner. I mean, it was more than just calm, reasoned, and logical, though. The guy had a certain charisma, and he could draw you into his thought processes, and I really admired that. Yeah, I didn't always agree with his ideas. Sometimes I thought they were kind of out there, but he could draw you in, and he was also a gentleman. He would respect you, even if you didn't agree with him. He was a really interesting human being.
Yes, indeed he was. That's for sure, and that's what the show is all about.
Well, I'm very happy you are honoring his life.
Well,
he deserves it very
he
much.
Does. He does. That's for sure.
And you know, I have a feeling, Tim, that somewhere out there, he's looking down on us.
I would like to think that. I would like to think that. But you never know.
You never know. The world is a stranger place than we think it is.
Yes, it is.
Bill Nagel, W3DUQ, was a man who taught me that.
And he taught me that, too. Anyway, Kevin, you have any more words of wisdom before we move on to the next item here?
Well, I would just like to say that that Bill Nagel also was a man who was influential in me wanting to get my amateur radio license and also pushing my thinking more toward becoming an AMer than any other mode of operation, because he, at a time when AM was being abandoned by all the institutions of amateur radio, by the manufacturers, by the ARRL, he continued to be devoted to the cause of high fidelity AM, and not only high fidelity AM, but highly effective AM operation on the amateur bands. And you know what? He was almost all alone, along with you and maybe a few dozen other guys at the time in the late 60s, early 70s. But you know what? He's been vindicated. AM has not only survived, but it's prospered, and it's gone high tech, and it's better than ever. And W3DUQ had a lot to do with that.
That he did. Well, thank you for your time, Kevin.
Thank you, Tim. And I'm really looking forward to hearing the rest of the program.
Well, we're on tonight from 7 till 9 p.m. on all four BCQ frequencies and streaming at WBCQ.com.
Excellent. Well,
all
great
right.
Great to talk to you.
Good to talk with you, man. Have a good night.
73. Bye.
Bye. Well, now we go through the halfway mark. Yes, kick me through the goalpost of life, ladies and gentlemen out there in Radio Land. For it's a continuation of the Uncle Willie Memorial happening here on WBCQ, Monticello, Maine, USA. A member station of Farts, the first. First Amendment Radio Transmitting Society. And we're quadricasting tonight, Area 51 at 5110 kilohertz, 7490, our standard AM service, 9330, and 15.420. Another hour of fun games and, well, I don't know about fun games and entertainment, but at any rate, it's honoring Uncle Willie. Yep, he was very much about proving extraterrestrials out there in radio land. Yes, extraterrestrials, UFO beings, whatever you want to call them. They were very much a focal point. And it's something to think about. Yes, we are not alone. I basically believe very much in what he had to say. He was really ahead of his time. Really, we'll be missing him. You know, there's enough material here to do two shows. So with the first installment, I'll see what I can do. And the second installment, who knows? Tune in right now from Klaatu.
and transmit thought energy far beyond the norm.
We could all learn to get along with each other. Yep. The frailties of humanity. Man's inhumanity to man. I'm just taking editorial license. Yeah, I wonder if those occupants could fix the planet problems here on Earth. W3DUQ's passed away this Friday, a little over a week ago. I wonder if he is looking down on us all. Is going to take us away. And you know something? Yeah. This is what happens when you consume a certain amount of rich stuff. You gotta drain your log, you know? We'll be right back. telephonium, I have Mr. Mark Ryan, WA1FAF, affectionately known as The Faff. Now, years ago, The Faff and I went down to Bill's place, known as Uncle Willie, for a New Year's Eve party, 1969 into 1970. And it was a growing time for both of us. So, Mark, welcome on into Radio Timtron Worldwide.
Yeah, good to talk to you, Timmy.
Well, good to talk to you. What do you remember? What are the points of memory of this fantastic journey when you saddled up your mother's car and I headed out with you? I forget whether I talked you into coming and picking me up, or if you, or if I took the train, affectionately known as the Metal Dinosaur, into Boston and wound up in Belmont, Mass., where you were living at the time.
Yeah, I'm not sure about that detail, but I do remember that, you know, that you and Bill Nagel invited me down, and it would have been the first lengthy road trip that I had taken from New England. And he was what, about 6 to 7 hours away, and I was 18 years old and led a pretty sheltered life, and I looked forward to the adventure, looked forward to meeting him. Bill was certainly a big-time personality on the radio those days. You know, he had a big signal and a nice-sounding radio and a booming broadcast-quality voice. And the thing that I remembered most about Bill before I went down there is, even though he was about 11 years older than me, I never felt like he treated me like a kid. I felt like he treated me like an equal. So I thought, well, you know, this is going to be something. I have nothing else planned on New Year's Eve, and we certainly have enjoyed a lot of New Year's Eves together since, Timmy. But that was quite an adventure, and my first long drive. I'm glad you took it with me.
Yes, I'm glad I did too. It's one of those memories that I'll have for the rest of my life. What I remember is certain mind-altering substances that were ingested, and how we really got into music.
Well, Bill had a tremendous stereo system for the day, and I believe he had AR3A speakers.
I think those were AR2As, and they were sitting on top of some homemade 12-inch woofers and bass reflex cabinets.
Oh, okay. definitely big sound.
Oh, yeah.
Thunderous bass. And he just had, at that time, I believe it was just like a 12x60 mobile home he was living in, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think it was about that size, a 12x60.
Yeah, so here's this, you know, monstrous stereo system in this very small metal building. And, you know, the volume and the quality was tremendous. And, he built these color organs. So on each speaker, there was this box with different colored lights that would blink to the sound of to the different frequencies of the music.
Yep.
There'd be a light for bass and a light for treble and a light for mid-range. And I had never seen anything like that. There were a lot of things I had never seen before, but Bill knew how to throw a party, didn't he?
Yes, he did. Well, one thing I remember is a tank full of tropical fish, and trying to do a mind lock on the fish. Or another thing was the TV set being turned on, but no audio, and how some of the programming would follow along with what was playing.
Oh yeah, the music or whatever would seem to fit the TV show. I think we even were watching some cartoons. Or
yes,
something. It was pretty unusual stuff on the stereo. Yeah, he was kind of ahead of his time back in those days, and it was certainly I certainly learned a lot over the course of that day and night, and discovered some new and different things. But mostly, what I got out of remembering that time with Bill was was I felt like I was finally growing up for once. You know, that here I am, maybe I really am an adult. Maybe I can really make adult decisions and do adult things. And, you know, he really made me feel at home, which meant a lot to me because I had spent very few, you know, I had not spent very many nights away from home and up until that point. I think I had stayed at your place up in Rockport a couple of times and, you know, a couple of other places. But here I was 6 or 7 hours from home, and I got to admit, I was a little nervous and I was definitely out of my element. But, you know, I think back to that night, and Mark Connolly, Mark W-A-1-I-O-N, and I went and visited Bill on a couple of other occasions in the early 70s, and though it might not have been quite as dramatic event as that one on New Year's Eve that you and I went to, I always felt the same way when I left. He was a guy that treated me well, made it clear that, you know, he was happy to see me, and you know, anytime I talked to him on the air, and I did for many, many years after that, he was always glad to hear from me, and it was amazing his breadth of knowledge involving so many different subjects, whether it would be high-end audio or science fiction or maybe even some of the science fiction he thought was science fact, people from other planets visiting us and other stuff that I didn't quite grasp, but he was certain about. He was like no other, a unique character to be sure.
That's for sure. That's for sure. Boy, I'm just thinking back on everything, and there's just too many details to even think about or mention, but I will be covering a few of my own on this broadcast, or maybe I will have already covered them by the time I air your thoughts and reflections here. So maybe you'll be tuned in tonight.
It's certainly sad to think of our compatriots passing away as, you know, we ourselves start to turn into old buzzards, especially you, Timmy.
Oh, man. Yeah. Don't even mention it.
We can think back to some of the many friends that we've made over time. Thankfully, most of them are alive and well and doing just fine, even if they're not on the radio. But, you know, Bill Nagel was certainly a unique character and a good man. And I never heard him ever get cross with anybody. He was about as mellow as they come. He always treated me wonderfully, and I'll appreciate him always for that.
Yes, and he will always be remembered, always. Anyway, Fwaff, I thank you for your reflections here.
And, well, it was a pleasure, and we miss Bill, but there are many, many recordings of him on the radio, and his voice will live for a long, long time, and we'll all remember him for a long, long time, for sure. He influenced a lot of people.
That he did. Before we go, what music do you remember? What songs were pumping out of that stereo? I remember quite a few, but perhaps you can fill me in.
If I'm to pick out one,
yes,
I'd have to say it was Staring at the Color Organ while you played I Can See for Miles by the Who.
Yes. Yes, indeed.
Somehow, some way, it seemed to ring true at that particular time.
Oh, it did, believe me. Well, hopefully I'll be jogging people's memories that are listening into this radio program that's British for program, and I thank you.
Good to talk to you, Timmy. Take care. We'll talk to you soon.
Bye-bye, Faf. Take care.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Rock and roll! Let's boogie!
Radio Tuntron Worldwide.
Turn up!
Mr. Warren Ellie, W1GUD, I kind of caught him with his pants down, or shall I say, driving in his car. So he's on his cellular telephonium right now. So how you doing, Warren?
I'm doing good. I'm very sad to hear of Willie's passing.
Yeah, we all are. That's for sure.
He was just kind of a fearless leader of the AM crew back there in the 60s, and I know it went on for a number of years through the 70s and into the 80s. And kind of a party master.
Yes, he was a big-time party master.
Kind of like the Ken Kesey of the bunch.
Yes.
And, you know, it was a time that most of the big iron stations on Saturday nights would kind of have a song to play.
Yes, they did.
Kind of had a theme song. Only the big iron stations that sounded good, you know. And I always thought Willie's was I Fought the Law.
I think it was.
But boy, it was pretty impressive. Pretty impressive. And those Icedale digs of his, you know, that was amazing. I mean, I'm absolutely certain that some of my hearing problems now in my 60s began in front of those gigantic speakers and color organs.
Yes, indeed.
Down there at Willie's.
Those color organs.
Oh, my God. And I'd never seen one before, you know. And I don't know, it's funny, but I always have thought of Willie all these years. Whenever I heard Steve Miller Band's Song for Our Ancestors, you know, the one with all the tugboat whistles and the sound of the harbor, and was off the Sailor album. I just remember that.
I don't have that. I'll have to add that. Because
it's really something that was always played, it seemed to me. It was just incredible on Willie's system there.
Yes, indeed. What other tunes do you recall that you heard pumping forth?
I seem to remember Hendrix.
Yeah.
Oh, and who? The the Who album. I don't know if it was Who's. It was the one with the commercials in it. You know?
Yeah, the Who Sell Out. Yes.
Can.
Yes, the Who Sell Out. One of my favorite albums.
Sell Out. That was it. Yeah.
Yep. And
I mean, music was a big thing down there, and to hear that kind of audio, you know, it was just. And I remember the microphone out at Icefield Lake.
Oh, yes, and, that's right. He had a remote microphonium.
Oh, yeah. He was very entertaining, and he really did make people feel welcome. You know, that was the thing about him. He wasn't a snob.
Yeah.
He was just a good guy who had the best signal around. And in the beginning, I'm sure he was one of the first to really have big iron and all that in those days.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed.
God bless him, and rest in peace, Willie.
Yeah, rest in peace, for sure. Anyway, Warren, let you get on with your trip there.
All right, my man. I'll definitely be listening to the playback.
Okay.
Have a good show, Timmy.
Have a safe trip.
Yes, sir.
Ziggy played guitar, jamming good with Webb and Gilly and the Spiders from Mars. He played it left hand, but made it too far. Became the special man, then we were Ziggy's band. Ziggy really sang, screwed up eyes and screwed down hair too. Like some cat from Japan, he could lick 'em by smiling. He could leave 'em to hang. They came on so loaded, man. Well hung, Snow White tan. So where were the spiders while the fly tried to break our bones? Well, just the
telephonium right now. I have Mr. Joe Fell, W3GMS, who has just returned from, alas, a memorial service for Frank, KB3AHE, the slab bacon with the fat meat a-shaken. A very mellow guy who is no longer with us as well. So, Joe, how was it and who was there?
Yeah, Tim. Well, the service was very good. You know, it's bittersweet always to lose such a good friend. but it was well represented, and there's going to be another celebration with his ham friends that are going to be happening later in December. So that today was just the church service portion of it, but it was really, really well done, very, very nice. And I'm pulling up the picture here, and the miscreants from the AM community were Rick, W3RSW, Bill, K-A-8-W-T-Q, I think it is. Might have his call.
W-T-K. Yep, W-T-K. Yep.
Yeah, Bill was there, and he came all the way in from Ohio or West Virginia.
Wow.
Where some people came quite some distance. Then we had Steve. The old HUZ, the Huzz Man, which is now K4HX.
The Hex Man.
The Hex Man. And then we had good old Bertel Scurvelius. Yes, my neighbor and lifelong friend, Bert, WA3JYU. Todd was there, K1KAQ. He came all the way up from North Carolina. Carl, KD3CN. From out in Stroudsburg, PA, which is just a little bit west of our QTH in Urselden. And none other than Johnny, W3JN.
Ah, yes.
I also saw Vortex Joe there, N3IBX. So he came down, and we had the church service, and then we went back to Frank's old house, Carol's house, and they had some eatery and things like that, and it was as nice as it could be. The weather was good. It was a little bit on the cool side, but everybody was having a good time, and I think it helped Carol and her family along. And she has her mother now living with her, so that's been helping her along. But all Frank's antennas are still up. John W3JN has been pretty much handling the estate as far as finding homes for Frank's various radio pieces. But all in all, not bad. And then in mid-December, there's something, and I think it's posted on AM Phone when it is, there's going to be kind of a get-together down there with his radio friends and some of his machinist friends, because Frank was very much into machine shop and making things and working with lathes and working with metal and all that kind of stuff. So not too shabby overall, Tim.
Okay, Joe. Boy, I'm glad you called in, because it was Joe who... Actually, it was Paul, W2JTD. Hopefully, we'll get Paul on the line here.
Okay.
Of who emailed me your email to him. And it just kind of hit me like a ton of brick, because I go back a ways. But you go back a long time ago with Bill. What are your earliest remembrances and his influences upon you as a Johnny novice?
Yeah, well, Bill had, when I first got on the air, there was two big AM signals. It was local to the Westchester, Pennsylvania area. And the two kingpins at the time were Harry, W3FDY, Harry Davis, and he became my mentor and just had a tremendous impact on my life, and I've talked about that before. And the other one was Bill, W3DUQ. It was only about 4 miles away from where my parents lived and I lived growing up. So I guess it was about 1964 or so, maybe 63. You know, I was in Cub Scouts and I found this old floor model console radio. So I called my mother up and she came with her Triumph Herald car that was a convertible, and there's like four Cub Scouts, and we managed to get this old Buzzard floor model radio into the back of the car, and I got it home and it didn't work, so I just unplugged the tubes and cleaned everything, and by some lucky stroke the doggone thing started playing. And Bill W3DUQ was one of the first signals that I heard on the air, and he was at his parents' place on Powell Lane, just outside of Westchester.
And what did Bill refer to Westchester as?
Bust Crusher.
Yes.
Moniker on the air.
Yes.
And Bill was always into sound effects, as you will probably remember.
Yes, I do.
He had this tremendous echo machine made, and he used a tape recorder, and he staggered the playback heads, and he would get echo. And later he also had some Hammond reverb springs, and he used to talk to Igor, And Igor was this fictitious character that was down in the basement of his parents' home. And he would open up the door, and he would turn the echo chamber on, and he would yell down the stairs, "Igor!" And you just heard all this echo, and it was really amazing. It sounded like he was really talking to some creature from beneath. And that kind of summarizes Bill. Bill was a guy that was always into trying new things. He would accomplish a given task, whether it be building the upside down tube rig or later in life, you know, the software-defined radio stuff, or one of the first guys really to modify an FT-101 and then the FT-1000 and all that series. And before that, you know, there was the Heathkit Apache with the sweep tubes in the output, or the upside-down tube circuit.
Basically a high-level balanced modulator.
Exactly.
And then he crammed
the carrier tube, and then you had the peak tube.
Yes.
And then he got a tube from that they used in these environmental shaker tables.
Yes, 5868s.
Is that what it was?
Yep, that's what P.W. Fallon is using as modulators in his 41000 rig. They're basically a repackaged 833, but a much better version.
Okay. Well, Bill built a big amplifier, linear, and he would have the Heathkit Apache with the upside-down tube circuit in that. And, you know, he'd be modulating 200-250% positive without any problem at all. So he had this very loud signal in the air. And very noticeable. But Bill's, I think one of the things that I'll never forget about Bill, Tim, is his nature of conversation. You know, I never really heard him raise his voice or get angry. He had this very mellow, laid-back type tonal quality that he would project on the air, and it was unique in that regard. And he would, that was kind of his signature. And, you know, it was one of those things where you heard Bill and you heard some, he always had a little bit of ambiance, a little blower noise in the background. And I made a comment the other day, you know, and all through all the different evolutions of different kind of rigs that Bill put on the air, he always sounded very similar. And that it goes all the way from the early Heathkit Apache modified upside-down tube circuit rig all the way up to the SDR stuff. And he always sounded, you know, you tuned in, he said, you knew right away that that was W3 Drink Up Quick, which was early phonetics that he used on the air. You probably remember that.
Oh, very much so. The other thing I remember is his squeaking office chair, his operator's chair.
That's correct.
And then his 10-minute ID timer.
Very unique.
Yes, yes.
And that was kind of Bill's signature. And I think there was that uniqueness in pretty much everything he did in life. He would accomplish something, and he would say, okay, I've been there, done that, I've optimized that, let me move on to something else. So he moved very quickly from project to project. And the thing that also I saw yesterday, I looked up on the Internet, and I found his original article, which was very early done, very early on a tube synchronous detector that was published in 73 magazine when Jim Fisk was the editor. And Jim Fisk later went on and started Ham Radio magazine. And Bill was self-taught in electronics. I don't think he had any formalized training, but he was self-taught, and he just had the gift for it. You know, he was very, very, very accomplished. So he built this tube synchronous detector, and I read the article yesterday, and it was just a beautifully well-written article. And this was long before, you know, sync detectors became in vogue. And, you know, kind of a pace setter he was. And, that, you know, and he was that way all the way right up to the last time he was on the air.
I remember his very, you know, when I visited his station in November of 67, I strongly remember his, he was probably one of the first stations to use audio processing. He built his own copy of the GE Unilevel, which is kind of like a gate stay level. Had that 6336 or whatever it was, 9-pin miniature dual variable mu triode as the gain element.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what he had.
Yeah, and I remember that. And, of course, you know, I heard this Unilevel. And there was another ham that's a silent key now, Mark Stevens. K3VBG.
Oh, yeah.
And gone a number of years, and Mark built that after Bill did. And, you know, they would all go, you know, with their tongue, and to measure the decay time of these things. So you'd hear, you know, the audio go quiet on that loud tone, and then you would hear the background noise come up. It was very unique. And Bill gave me his original schematic of that. The unilevel was also built into a mixing console and an audio driver amplifier. And I'll never forget, because one of the transformers that fed the unilevel, he had a special notation on that you had to rotate that transformer for minimum hum level.
Yes. So
there was evidently some AC fields there, and he would tweak that. And he built that whole thing while he was working for a company in Westchester, ultrasonics company in Westchester. And he worked there for quite a while, and Bill had the habit of parting heavy and hardy on weekends.
Yes, indeed.
And so he would come in Monday, maybe he would show up about 3 o'clock or so, and the name of the company was Sonobon. It was the name of the ultrasonics company where he worked. And even though they appreciated all his technical talents, I guess eventually they couldn't deal with the showing up late on Monday after the hearty partying weekend. And I think he moved on. And I think that's when there was some transition time. But that's when he ended up working for Jesse, K3GKB.
Yes, they had a company known as Impossible Electronic Techniques, or IET.
Right, and remember the low-light cameras?
I sure do.
Okay. So he got involved in that, and then after that he worked for a computer company that they made, like, legacy punch readers and things like that, because punch readers were falling out of vogue and nobody made them. But evidently there was enough customers that had those that they wanted hardware to support some of their legacy stuff. So he worked at that company for a period of time, and that's a company that he actually retired from.
Yes, I do remember when he retired, he couldn't get out of there fast enough.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I feel one of my proudest moments with Bill, there's been a lot of them, is I had a GMS radio bash here maybe 10, 12 years ago. It's been quite some time. And it was just kind of the local hams. And it was very difficult to get Bill to leave Icedale, which is where he lived.
Oh, it was impossible.
Yeah. And he found out about my GMS bash. I called him up and I says, Bill, we'd really like if he'd make it down there. And he just bought a new Honda Civic, I remember. And doggone, he came down. I have pictures of him down here. And it's one of the documented moments that he actually left his Icedale facility.
Wow.
Yeah. So I might have some audio recordings of him operating my GMS station. But another interesting thing, since we're talking about Bill and my posting on AM phone, I got an email from a gentleman called Bernie Sayers. And, you know, over the years, I heard Bill talk about Bernie. And Bernie sent me an email this morning, and I'd like to just read it here real quick, because Bernie was the guy that got Bill into radio.
Really?
And yeah, and he saw my posting on AM phone. He contacted me. I haven't gotten back to him yet, but Bernie's call is W3ZLU.
Boy, Bernie must be an old buzzard.
Oh, yes, he's probably as old as Hiram or even older.
Nobody's older than Hiram, but anyway.
So anyway, he says, I just read your bill on QRZ.com. Okay, so it was an AM phone. I had put a notice over on QRZ.com as well at somebody's suggestion. I received a telephone call this morning from Sandy about Bill's passing. I think Sandy may have been Bill's niece. He says, I certainly can't take any credit for the amazing stuff Bill did in ham radio, but I can take credit for getting him interested in amateur radio. I got my ticket, W3ZLU, in 1952 at the age of 11. If my old brain remembers it correctly, maybe 1953, Bill and I rode the same bus to school and grew up in Suburban Village near Westchester. When he realized that I had a ham ticket, he spent every evening and every waking hour studying theory and going to code classes in Westchester. We stayed in contact all these years. He called me about 2 weeks ago. Sadly, he had great difficulty making clear speech. And he says it's sort of ironic because the biggest AM signal on the air, or one of the biggest AM signals on the air, was having trouble putting together his words. And he would be very frustrated because he couldn't communicate what was in his mind. He said, we went our separate ways after I moved to Ardmore, but we talked often on 80 meters. Quite a guy. And signed Bernie W3ZLU. So I thought that was pretty neat that that Bernie reached out. And I heard Bill over the years of talking about a Bernie, and now this kind of completes the chapter of that book.
You know, speaking of Bill, he had a sister who recorded her own cover version of These Boots Were Made for Walking, a tune called This Rig Was Made for Talking.
I remember that.
I'd love to get a copy of that.
Boy, so would I. I remember that on 75 meters.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, you know the story. You know, I guess enough years have passed so we can talk about it. But Bill lost his license.
Oh, I know.
For some music playing. But he was never really off the air because his good friend Jesse, K3GKB, came in and bought the station for a penny or a dollar. And it really, really annoyed the FCC because here they had zapped his license for a year, and here he was back on the air almost instantaneously, operating under K3GKB, and the same type of on the air format continued.
I remember that.
And you'll probably remember when Bill had handled the groundwork for K3GKB Aeronautical Mobile.
Yes.
You remember that one?
Vaguely.
Well, a quick story there is Jesse was very much into skydiving. So they said, well, you know, wouldn't it be neat if you could get on, and I forget whether it was 75 meters or 40 meters. I guess it was probably 75. Wouldn't it be neat if we could get you on 75 AM Parachute Mobile? So Bill pulled up in his car. He had an LMAC AF-67. I forget what receiver he was using. And he had this little bug that he found. It was a surveillance bug. I remember him because Bill showed it to me. It was in this real chrome small container about the size of a cigarette pack, which was small for the day. And they strapped that on Jesse next to his spare chute. And sure enough, Jesse jumps out of the airplane. I'm not sure up how high he was, maybe 4,000, 5,000 feet up. And the first thing you hear, and people still talk about the bay, is, I'm tumbling, and everybody's on the ground. Is this guy going to be okay? In the meantime, Bill was rebroadcasting over that bug transmitter and receiver on either 75 or 40, and I'm pretty sure it was 75. And that was the first time that I remember an aeronautical mobile dropping from a parachute, from a plane, skydiving, free-falling, actually on 75 AM. And I, at the time, I was up at my mentor, Harry, W3FDY's, up in Parksburg, his radio site. So I was listening and talking to him at that point in time. So that was another thing. And this was something that Bill and Jesse conjured up of something unique to do. And for its day, it was very, very unique.
Yes. I certainly remember that. And you know something? Years later, Bill packaged up that AF-67 and sent it up to me. I remember hearing him mobile while his facility at Icedale was being put together.
That's right.
And I treasured that thing. I was going to build up a power supply for it, fix the audio in it and all that. Well, needless to say, I lost that in the fire. But
what a shame.
Yeah, what a shame.
Yeah, he had that in his, I forget what year Chevy had. It might have been a 57 Chevy. And I remember it because he had a big board on the passenger seat. And the AF-67 was bolted down. And he used to go from his parents' place where he was living up to the new property. And his father gave him that property. His father owned some land up near Icedale Lake.
33 acres, as I remember.
Yeah. And he gave him the land, and Bill put his mobile home in there. And the first thing he put up, even before the mobile home was delivered, was the dipole antenna. And it was way up
there. Way up there. Must have been about 80, 90 feet up in the tall, spindly trees.
And I seem to remember he had a parasitic reflector under it for a period of time.
Maybe.
And he was running some tasks with a big old buzzard knife switch to get it signaled. But he would be sitting there in the Chevy and with the LMAC plugged into the antenna long before there was any dwelling on the property itself. And, you know, just anticipating when the whole move was going to happen. And then it ultimately happened. And that's when he set up the upside-down tube exciter, which was the modified Apache, into the big amplifier.
Yes, indeed.
The other thing I'd like to say too is Bill remained constant with his advanced thinking all the way up to the end. I had the pleasure of visiting him several times up at the nursing home, and he probably could have gone back to his home in Icedale. But he told me on the phone. He says, "Joe, he says I'm going to stay here. I really like this place." He says, "I've been very much of a recluse much of my life," and he says, "there's all kinds of great ladies around here to talk to." And he says, "I'm just having a blast." So it was his choice, and he worked some kind of arrangement, financial arrangement, I guess, with the nursing home, and he was able to stay there, and he was having a blast. About a year ago, Martha and I went up, and it was a typical Bill and everything. And he would, you know, all his stories and things like that. And then I went up with my friend Bob, N2HM, XWA3JYT, a good friend of Bert, JYU's. And we went up maybe 2 months ago. And Bill was in the common area, you know, where they sit. We didn't go to his room per se. And he was talking about all these inventions. I mean, his mind was just still very, very active. And one of the things...
I just hate it when that happens. Oh, sorry, Joe. You know, we run out of time here. After all, we have to keep time. And, you know, about Uncle Willie there's just so much more. So hopefully... coming up a week from now will be a continuum of the Uncle Willie honorarium. Yes, the Uncle Willie honorarium. Whatever, friends. Glad you tuned in. Coming up on Area 51, the Lumpy Gravy Radio Show. And 7490.